On today's Countdown to Eternity, Pastors James Cadiz and Tom Hughes will discuss Iran's attack on Israel and the many implications that can be drawn by recent events. They'll also discuss the culpability of the United States, as well as the new problems that have arisen as a result of these attacks. Let's get right to it.
Well, hello, my dear brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to another episode of Countdown to Eternity. There's a couple of facts I want to state right off the bat. Number one, I am with my dear brother, Tom Hughes. And number two, I have to say this. We are headed for an absolutely fantastic show because things are popping off in the Middle East and we have a whole lot to talk about. So, Tommy, what's cracking? What's the latest and greatest with you, bro?
Obviously, since we last talked, let's just say a whole lot of things have been going on over in the land of Israel. And, we're watching rockets and missiles, and things are escalating. I mean, it's like everywhere we look, James, and we're going to get to this Israel stuff in just a minute, but every single place we look, man, I don't see how people can look at what's going on in the world right now and think, things are not coming together as the Bible told us they would. And the Bible tells us these things so we would watch, so we would be ready, so we would know. Man, it's not a coincidence. We got stuff going on with Russia, Iran, Israel, the economy, threats of pestilence, just unbelievable things going on all at the same time. All signs Jesus tells us to watch for that would converge while Israel's a nation again, while anti-Semitism increases, while attacks against Israel increase, and people are just ignoring it, going, that's no big deal. Business as usual. This is not business as usual.
Yeah, bro, I can tell you that for sure. We are definitely in an unprecedented place. And especially when you stop to consider the kind of fire that the United States of America is playing with. Every single time I see the United States of America a function of some level of foreign policy, I am reminded of the fact that they are inconsequential in Bible prophecy because we are dooming ourselves in ways that I can't even begin to imagine. When you begin to see the type of things that happened a few days ago with the attacks by Iran on Israel, look, I was wrong about that one, Tommy. Look, I predicted, and I was very firm about this prediction, that Iran would retaliate, and I was right about that, but what my prediction was is that they would retaliate using their proxies. And I was stunned to realize that they directly retaliated. They actually fired missiles and drones and all kinds of things into Israel for the first time in the history between Iran and Israel. And what's even more significant about that is I believe that this was somewhat of a coordinated effort, as crazy of a subject as that might be. And on top of that, to create things even more, make things even more complicated, how about we talk about Jordan's involvement in this and Saudi Arabia as they actively and unapologetically intervene by stopping some of those missiles and drones from entering into Israeli airspace. And by the way, there were some assets in Syria that were to have been reported to have been fired that prevented those missiles from also going into Israeli airspace. And it's believed that Russia may have been the person who was behind that or the people behind those missiles that were fired. Now, that is a widely unreported fact, but it's a really interesting thing when you stop to examine this, because this could be the formation of the geopolitical shifting necessary in order to bring us what is necessary for the precursor for Ezekiel 38. Now, I want to say this right off the bat. This is definitely not Ezekiel 38. There's a lot of things that tell us it's not Ezekiel 38, but oh my goodness, bro, we are looking at some things that are just unprecedented. I'm going to do this, bro. I have to get your ideas on this. Like, I have been dying to get your thoughts on this. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I find it fascinating with Saudi Arabia and Jordan especially getting involved. And you know, they know that the biggest problem over there is Iran. We're going to get more and more clarity on this as weeks continue and then months, but we are progressing forward. But Iran is the big problem. And if there's not a strong Israel, imagine what I mean, Saudi Arabia and Jordan, if Israel disappears, they know what's going to happen to them. Iran takes over everything. It is game over for them. They know that no matter how many people at the universities and the media here in the United States of America are shouting death to Israel and death to the Jews, listen, they're fools, absolute fools. But Saudi Arabia and Jordan, no matter what they have said publicly over the last several weeks or since October 7th, deep down inside, they know what's really up. Hence, 100%. That's why I believe that they got involved and took out some of those missiles.
100%. I think you're 100% right, bro. You are not getting that wrong. I think you're totally right. And I think that there's a lot of other implications that go with this that we have to talk about, because we have several statements that came out that are not terribly shocking, but they are of particular interest. The one statement, of course, almost instantly, like almost before the smoke settled on the rockets that were fired, Joe Biden comes out and basically says, Israel, if you fire on Iran, we're not going to back your play. You got that, right? And this is after he has the audacity to actually continue to fund Iran in order for Iran to do what they did, right? And then this, how about this? How about Russia comes out, makes an official statement. This is their defense minister, makes an official statement that basically says, if Iran is attacked, Russia would be obligated to defend Iran.
Yeah.
What in the world? And bro, the implications of that alone are so staggeringly significant. Can I give you just a quick idea of why that becomes really significant? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a little bit of a history lesson, and I've been talking about this all week. But if you stop for a second to consider the dynamics of the southern portion of the Arabian Peninsula, when we talk about Yemen, it starts there. When Joe Biden was elected into office, he declared the Yemeni Houthis no longer being a terrorist organization or an active combatant against the United States of America. What that did was it disabled Saudi Arabia from defending its interests against the Yemeni Houthis, because Saudi Arabia is utilizing American arms in order to be able to defend their interests. And when the United States of America actually said that they are no longer considering the Yemeni Houthis as enemy combatants or a terrorist organization, Saudi Arabia was no longer allowed to use the weapons sold to them by the United States of America because of the rules of engagement associated with the acquisition of weapons that the United States of America provided for them. What that basically did was it drove Saudi Arabia into the arms of Russia, and they went to Russia and they flipped off the United States of America and basically said, hey, Russia, we're going to buy some military equipment from you. Russia says, come on, let's go. So Russia ends up selling them S-300, S-400 batteries, but he sells them all kinds of helicopters and all kinds of stuff like that. As a matter of fact, we know for a fact, or it's not a fact, but we can likely surmise that some of the Russian missiles that were purchased were used to shoot down some of these Iranian missiles. Okay. So now Russia is going to, by the imposition of this statement by Russia, Saudi Arabia is going to find itself in a similar position, thinking, wow, we can't use Patriots anymore. We're not going to be able to use S-300s or S-400s. What in the world is next? Saudi Arabia is taking some things very seriously. And I'm going to tell you this right now. I would not be surprised if they signed some type of contractual agreement with Israel, especially as it relates to the function of the use of their arms. I'm telling you, like, this is big. And this is going to bring us to the peaceful condition that we read about in Ezekiel 38 at some point. It's pretty significant stuff, bro.
Oh, it totally is. I want to ask you about this that I read this morning coming from memory. And it says, Iran pre-coordinated its attack against Israel with the U.S. so that no one will be hurt and war with Israel will be avoided. I want to ask you about that in a minute, but I got to ask you about Ezekiel 38 before we go there. But regarding that article, basically what the article says is Iran retaliated, but they didn't really retaliate. And they did enough to be able to save face against Israel, but not really targeting any specific big targets. I want to get into that in a minute. But I look at Ezekiel 38 same way you do, James. And, you know, there's all kinds of people that are saying, hey, this is Ezekiel 38. No, this is not it. There are certain things that are necessary for Ezekiel 38 to come about. One of them is it's going to be a surprise attack against Israel. There is nothing at all that conveys this is a surprise attack. Israel has been on alert since Israel has existed in 1948.
That's right.
It's still there. It's always on the edge. It has these neighbors. Something has to transpire between now and the beginning of Ezekiel 38 in order to catch Israel off guard. And what you said, I think, is spot on, because it really leads to that. What's going to happen? A contractual agreement between Saudi Arabia and Israel? Something is going to happen that is going to get Israel into a place of saying, hey, we're finally in this peaceful place.
That's right.
A place we could argue safety and security based on their military. However, only to a point. They're definitely not in a peaceful place. Something has to happen between now and the beginning of Ezekiel 38. And I believe what we are watching could be the lead up to that, the preparation. And hence what we saw with Saudi Arabia and Jordan is leading me to believe that is where this is going.
Yeah, and when we start talking about the old school Hashemite kingdom, it would make sense that it returns to the place that it was. We don't really see Jordan as being consequential in Ezekiel 38, but we certainly know Saudi Arabia is. And what's really interesting with Saudi Arabia, or at least the significant part about Saudi Arabia, and it's another reason why we know that this is in Ezekiel 38, is Saudi Arabia very verbally objects to the attack that takes place by this coalition of nations, but they do not interfere militaristically speaking. But Saudi Arabia has already put their necks out, militaristically speaking, on this one. But you do bring up a really interesting point with this coordinated attack effort, potentially even by the United States of America. What kind of shocks me about this is if that is the case, and we are seeing right now, we are seeing Khomeini being very involved in this. Raisi is very involved in this. There's a lot of verbal, you know, barking that's going on. There's two things to note here. The first thing is, would Iran, with their hatred for America, actually work with America in order to produce this? It's distinctly a possibility, right? Because it's that whole, you know, keep your friends close, your enemies closer. But the other thing, and perhaps more significantly, besides the fact that Joe Biden is viewed as a weak leader, and so is his regime, and so the Iranians will use them for anything that they want to use them for. But perhaps the other area, and the one that is a bit more significant in the consideration of all of this, is the fact that Iran could have used the type of missile technology that Israel would have had a very difficult time thwarting. They do have missiles that are a lot faster than the ones that were fired, ones that fighter jets could not intercept, right? And so it is interesting to consider the idea that they did not fire those missiles, especially the ones that had significant warheads on them. That in and of itself is something enough to consider. It's like, wow, maybe there is something like that going on. But the problem that I have is, does Iran actually believe that Israel won't retaliate? I mean, we have to really think about that for a second, because I'm looking at the statements that are being made publicly right now by Netanyahu. Now, granted, he's speaking in Hebrew, but he's like, no, it's a wrap. We're engaging. So, you know, I don't know if this is interesting. And they seem to be doubling down on what they're about to do in Rafah in southern Gaza. They're doubling down on their position there. They haven't pulled any people away from that position when the attacks from Iran started. And they're also holding fast in the northern part of the country because of what's beginning to show its ugly face with Hezbollah to southern Lebanon. So this is really interesting stuff that we're seeing happening right now.
And I'm going to go back to what you said earlier also. I would have thought that Iran would have been using their proxies.
Oh, 100%.
So I mean, there's just very strange things going on with this whole thing. If I'm thinking like in Israel, I'm thinking, okay, what would I want to do first? I would want to hold the position up north like they've been doing, deal with Hamas, deal with Rafah. They've got to deal with that. I don't think they can pull out of that and then head up north and start dealing with that. I think they 100%. Have to finish the operation in Gaza. And then when that is done, maybe at that time deal with the problem that they have with Iran. Because let's just suppose Israel didn't do anything didn't retaliate against Iran for what they just did. Let's just suppose they didn't. Well, you still have this enormous problem called Hezbollah. Oh, yeah. And Hezbollah is going to use their weapons against Israel one day. And listen, Iran also proved how far they could penetrate into Israel's airspace, and they can do a lot more damage than what they did. 100%. You know, and so you look at this and go, so Israel has to do something eventually, but I just don't think today is the day for them to go against Iran while they still got to, they got to finish Hamas. It's like, yeah. You know, you think back to the Old Testament. What happened? God says, hey, you got to wipe out all of these people. What's Saul say? Well, I wiped out almost all of the people. You know, and what do we have? We still have this problem today, or they still have this problem today. They have the problem with the Gaza area. They have the problem with the northern area. They have the problems that are still in the areas of Judea and Samaria, which the UN and everybody else wants to call the West Bank. No, these are still problem areas because Israel, in their past, go back 2,500 years or 3,000 years, and Israel wasn't dealing with those problem areas back then.
Yeah.
And it's still there. I find that fascinating. So Israel can't leave Hamas and say, we've dealt with most of it, but there's still some holdouts there. Let's move on from there and go up north. They've got to finish Hamas. And then in the meantime, it gives them time to make better preparation. Also, I believe, now, obviously, I'm not a war general or anything like that, but I'm just guessing what it's going to, the way things have to be from my perspective.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think that it's a bigger deal than a lot of people might actually think, because we do have a major problem in Gaza here. And what is interesting is the geopolitics of how that's going to end up shifting things is a very difficult assertion to be able to make, because there are so many variables in the air. Like, here's a great example, right? We saw Israel repositioning their forces. Predominantly, the belief was they were doing that to get ready for an offensive in the south, in Rafah, which all of their movements seem to be pointing to that, right? Now people are reconsidering the idea that the reason why they did that was to prepare for what they assumed was going to be a series of attacks by Iranian proxies, okay? Because remember, here's the variable that everybody forgets. This is Iran seeking to retaliate for what is perhaps the most major loss that they have experienced in a lot of years. Some people are saying that this loss was bigger than even Soleimani, because they lost 16 IRGC officials. And of the ones that they lost, the one that was the most significant, of course, was the commander that was responsible for a whole lot of damage and a whole lot of coordination. And he meant a lot even to Hezbollah, and he meant a lot to some of the other proxies. As a matter of fact, we're already beginning to learn right now that he had some major associations with the Yemeni Houthis. So, bro, there's a lot here. And some people actually believe that many of the efforts in the Red Sea, as they were beginning to creep north into the Suez Canal, may have been at the hand of this commander. Okay, so there's a lot to be discussing here. Iran is pretty ticked off about this. This is a major blow. But at the same time, I think that Israel recognizes that they cannot afford to take their eyes off of Rafah. They can't. And by the way, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to make a statement that some people might disagree with. I would be willing to bet my bottom dollar that Egypt is keeping pressure on Israel very quietly, using back channel delegation. They're putting tons of pressure on Israel to finish off Hamas in southern Gaza. It's no secret that Egypt is seriously opposed to the Islamic Brotherhood, that they have a very difficult time with that. You could look at what the president of Egypt just did recently in pushing them all out of the country. So, you know, we could see another Black September type of a scenario, even in Jordan, believe it or not, because of the vitriol that has been created in the region as a result of all of these people infiltrating like a bunch of ants. It's a big deal. And a lot of the Arabs that are in the region don't want any of these people anywhere near them. So this is going to prove to be pretty chaotic.
I find fascinating you mentioned the Islamic Brotherhood. Haven't heard much about them since Sisi's been in Egypt, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's really kept that problem at bay. And it's also Egypt who built that new border wall, because they don't want this problem coming over there with Hamas. They don't want that. Right. And it is in Isaiah chapter 19 where we read that Egypt, because of their oppressors, turns to the Lord God of Israel. Yeah. So it's fascinating. And I'm not saying that's being fulfilled right now, but the day is coming when that will be fulfilled. And it is interesting. It's because of their oppressors. They're going, no, we don't want this kind of stuff. Yeah. And same thing with Saudi Arabia and Jordan. When we look at them, they don't want this kind of stuff either. They know the problem that Iran brings. And then if we fast forward, James, you look at Daniel chapter 11, which I'm teaching on this Sunday night.
Yep.
You have where Antichrist goes after the areas of Jordan. I think it's Amman and two other areas in Jordan. He does not have victory over them.
That's right.
Which I find very interesting. In the kingdom of Antichrist, near the end of the tribulation period, the 7 years, he tries to subdue Jordan and it doesn't work. This is kind of, you can't make this stuff up. When we see all of these things converging at the same time, none of this stuff is a coincidence. None of it is.
And you know what Egypt and Jordan have in common? Egypt and Jordan very, very early on chose to make peace with Israel. So when you see examples in Bible prophecy of Egypt and Jordan actually being honored by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it shouldn't be a surprise, because in essence, it's God honoring decisions that they've made to, in essence, choose to remain at peace, which, by the way, is strikingly interesting when you consider the fact that when Jordan chose to do what they did a few days ago, they did this considering the fact that they have been in the midst of a lot of tension with many members of Israel's parliamentary structure as a result of the Temple Mount rhetoric that's been going on, because they are the waqf that is overseeing the Temple Mount region. And I would even venture to say that Jordan is pretty ticked off right now that many of the missiles that were launched by Iran were directly targeting the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is a striking thought.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what would happen, if, let's say, Al-Aqsa Mosque got taken out by a missile or a rocket, or the Gold Dome. Here's the problem, though. You know, people are saying, hey, that could happen, and then Israel will be able to build their temple. Well, listen, there would be so much chaos.
Oh.
Israel wouldn't just be able to build the temple the next day. Believe me, it would be, for one thing, Israel would be blamed for it, but we would see an escalation, I believe, between the different Muslim sects is what we would have.
100%. 100%. It would actually slow down the process. Because I've heard people say, oh yeah, that would be great if that happened.
Yeah.
No, actually it wouldn't. It would be terrible. It would be a terrible thing.
I'm glad you 100%. Said that, because I have felt that same thing. I don't think it would speed up the process of a temple being built.
No. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Because there's a lot of people who think it would.
Oh my goodness. It would be such a crazy thing. Saudi Arabia is already within pop culture, and even some members of the royal family, including Mohammed bin Shalamin, have been insinuating the fact that the Temple Mount is insignificant. If that were to happen, if that bombing were to take place, Saudi Arabia would have to make an instant pivot in what is becoming an official position of the family. There's no way. It would be so bad. If there was a bombing on the Temple Mount, it would be a wrap. It would be bad. That cannot happen. It absolutely cannot happen. Well, folks, that brings us to one last sentiment that I want to bring to you, and that is this. I know I speak on behalf of Pastor Tom when I say this. It really is an honor to be able to have the privilege to do this for you guys. We love you. We do always hope that you enjoy listening to this or watching it as much as we enjoy making it. Look, on behalf of Pastor Tom Hughes, we just want to thank you for joining us for another episode of Countdown to Eternity. Times are changing, and they're changing quickly. Christ could come at any moment. Let's keep our heads up. Amazing things are happening out there. We love you guys. God bless you.
You're listening to Countdown to Eternity with Pastors James Cadiz and Tom Hughes. Look for us online at countdowntoeternity.com. You can replay this episode at countdown2eternity.com or listen wherever you get your podcasts. We're also at oneplace.com. I should also mention Pastor Tom's website. You'll find it at hopeforourtimes.com. Pastor James is on social media. He examines current events and connects what's going on in our world to Bible prophecy. Look for James Cadiz on YouTube, Rumble, and Instagram. Or just go to jamescadiz.com and start watching these videos today. Countdown to Eternity is listener-supported, and if the Lord is leading you to support what we're doing, a good place to go is countdowntoeternity.com. There you can make a secure one-time or ongoing donation to the ministry. Again, countdown, the number two, eternity.com. Have a question relating to Bible prophecy or want some prayer? Send that to us in the form of an email at countdown, the number two, eternity.com. Then join us next week as we continue the Countdown to Eternity. Countdown to Eternity is brought to you by Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill, and made possible through the support of our listeners.